Our next speaker, the topic is the CSU Accessible Technology Initiative. Reflecting on 6 years of progress. Okay, let's see, what did Joe say? Scrolling. I think that's what he said. Okay. All right, here we go. Reflecting on 6 years of progress, lessons learned, and current challenges, Mark Turner, Director, Center for Accessible Media, California State University, Academic Technologies Services, Long Beach, California. Please join me in welcoming Mark Turner.
Good afternoon. Can
And yes. If we can please have folks venture outside the door if you needed to do that. Or let's see, as they say it, outside, right? Is that the command? Outside. Thank you. Okay, Mark, thank you.
Okay, can folks hear me okay? Gosh, I have to get, they're frighteningly close to this microphone. So well, thank you. It's a pleasure to come down and speak with you. My first CCB attendance, so I'm very excited. So I have worked in disability services in higher ed for about 20 years. I was realizing as I was prepping to drive down here from Orange County today, it's rather frightening to think about. It's essentially been my entire career. It's all I've done. It's all I've ever really wanted to do. So when the opportunity arose about 6 years ago to come to the chancellor's office after about 14 years working on campuses to work on a system-wide initiative, I just simply couldn't pass it up. What I've come hoping to spend some time talking about with you is kind of briefly how technology is transforming the way that we're delivering our university programs and services, how the CSU in particular is tackling technology accessibility barriers, talk about some of the accomplishments that that we've achieved thus far, and then some of the lessons along the way. I certainly am not here to plug the CSU per se, but I think it's probably useful to just throw a couple stats out just to kind of give you a sense of the scale of what's entailed in trying to get 23 geographically distinct and culturally distinct campuses all moving in the same direction. So we have about 427,000 students and about 44,000 staff and faculty. And of that 427,000 students, we have about 11,500 registered with our disability offices. So you can think of it this way. We essentially have a mid-sized campus equivalent just of folks with disabilities enrolled in our school. So it's a pretty remarkable statistic. I have to imagine you're wondering how many of those folks that we serve in the category of visual disabilities. So I actually looked that up, and it's about 350. And this is registered numbers, and I'm confident that we have many others that that don't register as well. So CSU has really had a very long-standing commitment to disabilities. It goes back to 1980 when we established a system-wide policy specifically for provisions of services to students with disabilities and set up a system-wide advisory committee that has met twice a year every year for that many years. And the reason I mention our size is because it's a theme that I'll try to weave through the comments today, because I believe that our size, while logistically sometimes a challenge, also affords us the opportunity and one might say the responsibility to provide leadership in accessibility of higher education. So I think anyone here would disagree with the notion that technology is now a ubiquitous component of our lives. It's increasingly hard to remember a time before smartphones, mobile web, social media, iPods, iPads. Just as a little bit of a social experiment here, by a show of hands, who's currently carrying or has with them today an iPhone or an iPad? Wow. So at least I'd say, let's say half, roughly. This is extraordinary. This is extraordinary, thinking about where we've come in the 20 years that I've been in disability services. The concept that one of the best-selling electronic devices of all time can now be purchased, configured, and used by folks irrespective of their sight status is extraordinary. And it really heartens me to see that we've made progress. There's also a side of me that can be very impatient at times with the pace of that progress, but we'll speak to that a touch later. I don't imagine it would come as much of a surprise that the next thing I would point out is that technology is really transforming the way that higher ed institutions deliver our programs and services. In fact, I'd be hard-pressed to come up with any critical academic or administrative service that we provide at our universities that isn't mediated in some way by technology. And while making our curriculum and our services more electronic brings with it opportunities, it also brings with it some unique challenges as well from an accessibility standpoint that I'll get into. Actually, I missed an opportunity to tell a quick story. So I was at the National Federation of the Blind last December to give a brief presentation and participate in an event with publishers. And one of the leaders at NFB said something to me. It really struck me at the time, and it really resonates with our social experiment a moment ago. He said, "Now when I meet someone who's blind and they don't have an iPhone, my first question to them is, why?" So pretty extraordinary. So technology as a means to deliver our services. You know, we've got learning management systems, lecture capture systems, audience response systems, or what we call the clickers, right? We use those. Laboratory software, YouTube, e-textbooks. Each one of these, by virtue of being electronic, brings the possibility for removing accessibility barriers, and it also brings the possibility to introduce accessibility barriers. I think we've probably all experienced both of that. And yet, unfortunately, for all the genuine recognition I think we need to give to companies that are leading in this area, it can be a source of frustration that much of the educational technology that higher ed institutions are using wasn't really designed with accessibility in mind. And as a partial result of that, doesn't really provide adequate support for accessibility out of the box. We continue to find, as we adopt technology products, that there's limited awareness of accessibility standards, that there's little or no documentation regarding the accessibility of their support, documentation for the end user or documentation for the institution trying to gauge whether the product is accessible. The level of commitment to accessibility is really all over the map as well. The number of times I've had to have the conversation about how they will quote unquote monetize their investment in accessibility, I shudder to think about. You know, not surprisingly then, product accessibility support is not where it should be broadly in terms of educational technology. And we worry a great deal about this. And as a result, it's not, again, surprising. Accommodations related to accessible technology are a growing strain for students, but they're also a growing strain for institutions as well. The days when disability services offices focused on curb cuts, parking spots, and accessible paths of travel are really fading in memory. Today's most significant accessibility barriers on campus are usually technology related. Whether it's a cloud-based application or e-textbooks or a kiosk in the library, electronic signage, these are the 21st century curb cuts that we grapple with. And it makes it difficult for students in terms of delay and concerns about whether they'll get a comparable experience. And it makes it difficult for the institution who has now inherited the accessibility challenges of a product that wasn't delivered with accessibility in mind. So what was really needed, it was very clear, was a shift. We needed to shift from an assistive technology model where we were focused on providing responsive accommodations to an accessible technology model where what we focused on was more universal design and trying to ensure that the technologies that we adopted were going to be usable by everyone. So in 2004, the CSU did something that up until that point, no really large university system, and we are, by some measures, the single largest public four-year university system in the country. But up until that point, no major system had tried to tackle this at a system-wide level. I'm reminded of a joke someone told me when I started at the chancellor's office. They said, do you know the quickest way to change the direction of an aircraft carrier? Anyone know the answer, by the way? Shout it out. Quickest way to change the direction of an aircraft carrier? Sink it. Suffice it to say that I didn't come to the chancellor's office to sink it, but I think there was a lesson in there somewhere in terms of trying to understand the complexities of, again, getting 23 campuses on the same page and driving in the same direction. Our goal at the ATI, I'm just going to call it the ATI, the Accessible Technology Initiative from now on, our goal was to ensure that our programs and services and activities would be accessible to all students, staff, faculty, and members of the public with whom we engage. Fairly simple, rather broad-reaching, certainly ambitious. And we started with a couple of basic principles. One was accessibility. If we were going to move from assistive technology to accessible technology, accessibility needed to be a shared responsibility of the entire campus. It could not be the case that disability services was the sole venue for being responsive to accessible technology issues. This needed to be owned by the entire institution. The second was that the technologies that we adopted, whether we bought them, whether we built them, whether we downloaded them because they were open source on the web, that these technologies needed to allow everyone, irrespective of disability status, to fully participate in and benefit from the programs and services that use technologies. And third was that these technologies needed to provide comparable functionality, comparable timeliness, comparable affordability, or what NFB likes to call same features, same time, same cost. And that this should be done in as seamless manner as possible. Okay, as a principle, set is not equal. Okay, we want integration. We want technology to be the equalizer, not the remover of the barrier, not the creator of it. So our approach was to begin work to incorporate accessibility into our policies and into our business practices across the enterprise. And we identified a number of key strategies that were going to be critical. And it's those strategies and some of the results of those strategies that I really wanted to spend most of the rest of our time on. It was clear that there was no magic bullet. There was no one tool that we were going to use to make the CSU's technology infrastructure accessible, we were going to need to use an array of tools to solve a variety of problems. The first was that we needed to put our voice and our resources where our mouth was, and that meant establishing a strong institutional commitment. Okay, the ATI can't be successful if it's just operating at a grassroots level. We have no more passionate set of advocates for access than our disability office's staff, but they can't by themselves change their institutions. That requires the involvement and buy-in of leaders from the campus president through the CIOs, the VP of Student Affairs, the directors of academic technology. These folks needed to be on board, and they needed to understand that we were serious. So we established an executive order. We established a series of coded memoranda that stipulated how the executive order should be implemented. We established communities of practice in three areas we deemed critical, from accessible web, instructional materials, and procurement, so that we would have the involvement of implementers at every campus. And we involved all of the key stakeholders, the librarians, the disability office's staff, the instructional designers, the directors of academic technology, all of them, to ensure that this was going to get done in a way that reflected our commitment to shared ownership of accessibility. The second strategy that we deemed critical was we needed to establish clear goals and success indicators. I think some of you are probably familiar with the expression, failure to plan means planning to fail, right? So the ATI established a little over 40 specific goals across those three priority areas, web, instruction materials, and procurement, and about 120 success indicators. So we established what some of the key milestones should be for campuses as they moved forward with implementing the ATI, so that while the methods each campus might use might vary somewhat due to their size, their structure, their regional location, their political, sort of setup, we were all steering our ships toward the same ports of call. The third critical strategy was that in an environment where we have literally millions of web pages and tens of thousands of electronic resources, some going back 100 years, because many campuses before even the CSU existed were campuses, that had media libraries and book collections, and thousands of software products used in every field of study. We needed to prioritize. Okay? There needed to be a thoughtful, considered approach to how we picked what we were going to tackle and in what order and who we needed to enlist to be successful. While every technology barrier matters, because we don't want any technology to leave anyone behind, it was clear some mattered a great deal more. And so we established what we call the ATI prioritization framework. And this was intended to help campuses identify areas of greatest impact it asks a series of questions, my best to kind of simplify what otherwise can come across as a bit of bureaucratica, but bear with me. The number of factors we ask campuses to consider, including how widely deployed the technology is, whether it's used to deliver critical academic or administrative functions, like registration, course management systems, emergency management, whether it's the sole means by which that service is delivered or that information is conveyed, whether there are equally effective workarounds available in the interim, whether it's going to be reused repeatedly over time, whether the kind of information that's conveyed is of special relevance to folks with disabilities. And this allowed campuses sort of a conceptual framework for making effective decisions about how they were going to tackle technology accessibility barriers. The fourth strategy was that we needed to support campus implementations. We didn't want this to be a pronouncement from on high not backed by support and resources. If this was going to be successful, again, we needed to step up and put our money where our mouth was. Broadening accessibility from the job of the disability office to the job of every staff and faculty on a campus necessitates a great deal of raising awareness and providing business processes and tools that allow people to do their job differently than perhaps they've done in the past. So this meant setting up and operating many training conferences, periodic webinars, producing training modules that campuses could deploy, they could adopt or adapt, establishing a professional development website where we collected the exemplary practices and the promising tools, so that we didn't have 23 campuses trying to discover solutions to the same problem 23 times. Conducting monthly meetings with the communities of practice, meeting with the executive sponsors, to identify where we were making progress and trying to do postmortem on why things were working well, but also not, you know, being fearless enough to do postmortems and look at why we weren't making progress in other areas. Which takes us to the fifth strategy, which was, it was, in our view, it was critical that we measure and document our progress over time. Having long-term broad goals is helpful because, again, it provides a way to, it serves as a reminder of why you're working on what you're working on. But we felt it was critical that campuses be prepared to document the specific steps they were taking, the specific areas that, in which they were making progress, the specific areas where they were struggling. And so that's each year what they do. We have an annual cycle where they review and revise their annual plans. They select and implement projects and activities that reduce accessibility barriers. They then document their progress in their activities each year in reports that go to the chancellor's office. We then aggregate that information, review it, analyze it, and put out a sort of a state of the state report so that each campus is able to see where they are, where they've benchmarked relative to the system as a whole. And this also allows us at the chancellor's office to identify when there are areas where multiple campuses are struggling, because it suggests that perhaps we need to look at providing more support in that area. But it also means we know where campuses are doing well, and how we can help campuses package information about why they were successful in an area and share that with campuses that are struggling. The sixth strategy that we used was, we realized that we could not solve this, no matter how large an institution we were. We could not solve the systematic absence of robust accessibility support among IT products alone. That we needed to work closely with and constructively with the IT industry so that they could make meaningful changes to the way they conceptualize, design, build, test, and deploy technology. Okay. The customer has great importance in the marketplace, but at the end of the day, it's the vendor's products they expect to be accessible. So that means there's two things that we do with vendors, and this is where I think we learned the most. The first was, and these are the classic carrot and stick. Okay, so I'll start with the carrot. So there are many reasons we realized why vendors were not always producing accessible products. Why accessibility support was not robust when we would test the products. And we concluded our preferred method was to meet and try and establish constructive partnerships with them. Our experience was, it was rarely the case that vendors considered accessibility and simply concluded it was too much trouble or was not relevant to what they were doing. That was exceedingly rare. What we generally found was, the developers and the product managers who were building these products simply never thought about it. It wasn't part of their training. It wasn't part of the policies of the company, and it wasn't part of the key design requirements. How are we doing on time? Oh my goodness, okay. All right, then I'm gonna have to speed through this. So I'm gonna talk about a couple of examples of victories here. One is we did work with a company we're finishing up right now, a company called Alex, where they had built a web-based math tutorial system. And it was done probably 15 years ago using Java, and it wasn't compatible with assistive technology, and it presented major accessibility barriers. So they contracted with us, we did an evaluation, prepared reporting, and were able to significantly influence the prototype that they were building to replace their aging architecture using accessible HTML and JavaScript. And this is a product that's used by hundreds, if not thousands, of institutions around the world. We also realized it was important to be part of accessibility interest groups for vendors to influence decisions they made about how they prioritize accessibility at relative to other ways in which they improve products. And then lastly, we realized we needed to leverage the power of our procurement process to drive vendor improvements. And this was the stick. So in 2008, we did a system-wide learning management system request for proposal. And Blackboard at that time was used by more than half of our campuses. Yet when we did our testing, and this won't come as a surprise to any of you who've been in college recently, Blackboard had really serious accessibility problems. And we did something that up until that point, no large university system had done. They did not prevail in the contract. We did not select them as part of the system-wide contract. And that was an action that the Blackboard CEO later called the wake-up call that they needed to reactivate their accessibility effort. And we did a similar thing with iTunes University. At the time that we evaluated iTunes University, it had absolutely no support for accessibility. And the media was not available with captions. And the storefront wasn't usable without sighted assistance.
Can the person who has their iPhone on please put your headphone back on so the rest of us don't hear you going through your messages?
So,
thank you.
Okay, thank you. So in my last minute or so, let me just say we gave Apple 10 months to address their iTunes U accessibility issues, 12 months, and they finished in 10. By the time that year was done, they had ensured that their application worked with the accessibility APIs used by AT, they'd rewritten their storefront, and they'd added support for caption media. But it took a large institutional customer to say, this is not okay, and we won't use your product until we've done that, until you've done that. And then lastly, we realized we needed to get connected with others. We work closely with legislative analysts, our colleagues at other institutions, with disability advocacy groups like the NFB, and with the vendor community, because we realize that we all win when products are universally designed. The student avoids accommodations, the vendor has a larger audience for their products, and the institutions that adopt those products don't have to focus on accommodations and can instead focus on providing exemplary services. I had a brief minute or two to cover lessons learned, but I think in the interest of time, perhaps I'll need to save that for another day. So, thank you.
Thank you very, very much. It's definitely be, and that iPhone's still going. Wow. I wish Judge Sumowski was still here. Then we could have a really nice door prize. Let me see if we can take one question. Okay. I heard Mitch, and then I will do Vita. Gene, I'm sorry. You can catch him.
Sir, I'm Mitch Pomerantz, president of the American Council of the Blind, and you've twice mentioned our friends across the aisle at NFB, but you need to know that regardless of what the NFB tells you, I have members in my organization who are still using Blackboard and still find it inaccessible. I'll be happy. Unfortunately, the person that specifically comes to mind is not in California, but the NFB would have us believe that Blackboard is fully accessible. We know otherwise. Thank you.
That's valuable information, and I'd be happy to hang out in the back afterward. I'd love to get a little bit more information and be able to follow up with you about that, because I would certainly be the first to say that I know Blackboard not to be fully accessible, but I also know that they have made meaningful progress and that a lot of what used to require assistance.
Yes.
Indeed they do.
Vita.
Good afternoon, Mark. My question is, do you have some idea of how many people with disabilities are actually employed in accessibility services in the campuses, CSU campuses?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I've worked in the system now for about 16 years. I would love to be able to say I could come up with a number, because I know most of those folks. I could only hazard a guess, and I'm not sure it would really be fair, given that I haven't, you know, I've only been on site with about 3/4 of the campuses, but it's numerous.
Okay, thank you very much. And if you could connect with Gene Lozano, who's our vice president, after your presentation, because I know he had a question for you. So if you could touch base with him, that would be great. Everybody, please join me in thanking Mark Turner. Thank you very much. Okay.